Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to what I was going to call the very last dog day of summer podcast, because I feel like once you get into September, you have Traverse City, a little bit of preseason action going on, but this will not be a dog day of summer podcast because we have a very special guest on the air with us today, former New York Ranger Colton Orr. Colton, how are you doing today?
Good. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Mike. I'm doing good. Just, like you said, counting down the days for the season to get started, and just looking forward to another Ranger season.
That you are a regular fan right now listening to this podcast. A former NHL hockey player is just as anxious for hockey to start as you are. So at least in that regard, we are somewhat like you guys. So Colton actually has a lot going on, and I'm sure you guys are aware that the sequel to Goon, which was a movie that came out, I think, a couple of years ago, out, and Colton Orr is going to be a star on the big screen. The movie is out tomorrow. It releases to the theaters, and our good friend Colton Orr will be performing in that. So what was that like? Was it cool to be in a movie? Was it? There's a couple of other hockey players I know who are also some NHL guys who are in there as well. Was it something you were looking to do? Was it something that somebody came to you with? How did that whole thing get started?
Well, after the first Goon came out, like right away, a lot of players loved the movie. It was just, you know, it was a great film. It was done really well. And it just, you know, so we couldn't wait for the sequel to come out. And when I heard they were doing it, Jay Baruchel happened to reach out to me and asked if I wanted to be part of it. And I was like, for sure I do. Like, I love the first one. Like, let's, you know, any way I can be involved, I want to do it. So it just kind of came about like that. And when I got to be a part of it, then we got to do some, actually get on set. It was a real eye-opener because this is completely different. You're in your gear all day. You know, you're filming all day or all weekend to get, you know, maybe a minute scene, if that, like a couple of clips. And so it was a lot of fun. The fighting was definitely, for me, different. I've been talking about it. I couldn't pull my punches. I really wanted to just fight. There's some good fighting scenes. I'm like, it'd be easier if I could just actually hit the guy, or if he can hit me, I'll take a couple. You know, so just we had a lot of fun on set. Like you said, there's a lot of former guys, a lot of former and current guys. You had Peros, you had The Rock, Prost, Delzato. Like there's a whole handful of guys in the movie. So it was just great because it was just, you know, it was some really good actors that really kind of helped us out and kind of showed us the ropes, and we both had fun with it. We just, you know, it's a really good day and a couple days of filming. It's just, you know, I can't wait for it to come out in the States now.
I actually didn't realize Preston Delzato were in it. There's a nice little Ranger, former Ranger therapy group going on there for that,
yeah,
that movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's quite a few. So it was good.
What was your favorite part of becoming an actor?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I think just like being on set with, like, you know, you're on there with Liev Schreiber, you know, like you're working with him. He's you get to be in the fighting scene with him. It was just really cool to be among guys that are so talented at what they do, and just kind of be a part of that. This was, you know, my best experience for me.
Yeah. I mean, if you are a fan of the old game of hockey, it's pretty much, it's like Slapshot, but for now instead of in the past. If you don't, I was with the New Britain Herald, which is a newspaper in New Britain, Connecticut, about 5 years ago or 6 years ago. And the Hanson brothers came to the alumni game between the Hartford Whalers and the Boston Bruins. They played the alumni game at a Rentschler. Brian Leetch was there, and all the old guys, and they did they went around and just beat the crap out of some guys on the ice, and they took a ton of penalties. And you see some of these older guys in the crowd who are looking at them like they were kids again. And Slapshot was a little bit before my time and Mike's time, but these Goon movies have sort of a cult following at this point. So
they do.
Go ahead.
And you talk about just a funny story about so actually the story Goon is based on a guy named Doug the Thug, Doug the Thug Smith. And in Providence, with the Providence Bruins when I played there, he was my fighting coach for the team. Like, he would hang heavy bags from the rafters, or he'd put on sparring gear and body gear, and we'd be hitting them on the ice and grappling. And so this is kind of, you know, it's kind of full circle. This movie is actually a little, like, just loosely based on kind of, like, this guy who was just this, you know, crazy fighter, loved to just kind of go out there and fight as much as he could, wasn't a very good player at all. But, yeah, so it was pretty cool that he was actually my fighting instructor.
Greatest nicknames on the planet come from, I feel like, junior and minor league hockey. Doug the Thug is an outstanding name for a guy who's fighting in the juniors.
Oh, for an enforcer?
Yeah, Doug the Thug, yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. How could you? How does it not get better than that? I also had, Mike and I had no idea that it was based on an actual person. No clue in the world. So that's a nice little fact
amazing.
To take with you. When you have that's amazing. It really is amazing.
He's actually he's in the sequel. He's in the sequel.
Oh,
he's
is he?
In one of the fighting scenes. Yeah.
That's amazing. That just the degrees of separation between everything is really, really cool. Since we're speaking about you taking on a more expanded role on the screens, you're also doing some broadcasting for SNY now, and you said you're doing a little bit of that last year. Now you're going to maybe do a little bit more.
Yeah. So it you know, came about last year where I got to go on for Rangers, you know, down the stretch and for the postseason. And for me, you know, it's really different being on front of camera. When I played, you know, I wasn't the biggest guy to be out, you know, wanting to go talk to the media. You know, I'd avoid them a little bit. But now I'm really enjoying it. I'm having a lot of fun with it. I get privileged to still continue to talk about hockey, get to watch a lot of games. And like I said, I really enjoy it. I am a fan of the Rangers and still watching hockey. So it's a good fit, and I'm really, really enjoying doing it right now.
So is it weird being on the other side of that relationship? Like you obviously had a very, really long NHL career. You just said you kind of avoided the media. I'm sure you're not the only NHL player who's a little gun shy around them. And now you're on the other side of the microphone, kind of asking questions. Was there a transition there?
Oh yeah, it's definitely different. It's something, like you said, it was, it's hard. It's their job as well, right? They want to get the good stories. They want to, you know, get the information about the players. So, you know, you see the other side of it now that I get to actually do it. And, you know, it's not an easy job as well. It's something you have to work at, and you got to, you know, look for that good story or make sure you're getting the right information. And like you said, for me, it's just something it's keeping me excited. It's keeping me involved. And I'm having a blast with it.
Was going into broadcasting something that was kind of in your head during your career? Because I know, I can imagine that while you're playing, you know, all you can think about is just the game and continuing playing. But was there a point, you know, maybe towards the end of your career where you said, you know, when I hang up the skates, I don't want to just have hockey out of my life?
I always knew I was going to stick around the game. Hockey's been so good to me. I was so fortunate to play as long as I did in the NHL. And I always wanted to stick around the game, and I want to do something where I can be involved and continue to be, you know, involved in the game. And in some way, I also wanted to, like, you know, help kids, help develop players. And so it just, for me, like I said, I didn't know what I was going to do. I was trying to figure that out. The first year was kind of me, you know, trying things. I did a little scouting with the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, I tried the broadcasting. I've done a lot of charity work with the Ranger alumni. It was just trying to sort and navigate through, you know, what I wanted to do. So, and so it just kind of fell in my lap where we got a contact with SNY, and it's been a lot of, like, I've been just kind of working on that right now and kind of pursuing that.
And from a Rangers standpoint, Valiquette, Buron, who now is actually going to be, I think, doing color commentary for the Sabres, there is definitely a gateway there for that type of stuff. And it's, you know what, it's really cool because I think Valiquette, who you obviously played with and know, has some of the best analysis that you're going to get these days from watching Rangers hockey, just because the guy knows what it is he's talking about. Not that I would go against listening to anybody who has never played the game before on a professional level, because that would be me, Mike, and everybody else who writes for Blue Shirt Panther. But I think it is really cool to hear from these guys who have actually played the game before, and you bring an insight or a level of insight that other guys don't, because you've been there. When Valiquette talks about the stuff that Henrik Lundqvist does or his likes and dislikes, well, he shared the locker room with him for a few years. So it definitely carries a little bit more weight. And It's really cool, and it's good to hear that it's going well. And then on the other side, you're doing some coaching for the Fairfield Junior Rangers, correct?
I am, yeah. So this is just very recent for me. I just started, you know, I've had like two practices with them. And like I said, I just to develop players is something I'm passionate about. And wanting, like, near the end of my career, I started to really work with the young guys, really be that veteran presence around the room. So I think that's kind of, for me, that's what I want to do now as well. If I can pass along my knowledge, that what I used and how I got there and what it took, you know, I think that's what I think it'll help the kids and be able to develop and kind of, you know, see if they can make it or help them out through their career path.
You have a couple of daughters, correct?
I got one daughter and one son. So my daughter,
one daughter and one
turned,
son.
Five, and my son is one.
Sympathetic that my wife is having a daughter in 3 months. Jesus Christ, it's coming pretty quickly. You're going to have a little, couple of little hockey players there? Maybe a little New York Riveter coming around?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So my daughter, she grew up around the game. She loves it. She's always been around the dressing room and on the ice. And she's starting this year with the Rangers Learn to Play program, which she's so excited for. And I can't wait for to get out there. And she got all her gear already, and it was like Christmas around here when she got to try it on. It's fun to see her really, you know, love the game just from being around it so much. And she had a little bit of fun. I posted something on Twitter, and it got to like the Riveters and all that, and they were kind of, you know, joking around with her being, you know, a draft pick in the future. And so it's fun. I'm so excited. It'll be like that proud dad of, you know, watching my daughter play hockey. And then my son, when he gets old enough, I'm hoping he's going to want to play as well. So, yeah, it'll be fun to be able to help and possibly coach them when they get a little older as well.
I think the Rangers do a lot more grassroots programs than people realize. There's a lot more that go on in New York and definitely the DMA than I think a lot of people realize. And it's something we've talked about on the website before. It is really important. If you look at some of the more loyal, non-traditional fan bases, if you will, and I'm putting quotations around that, Nashville's a really good example of a team that really invested their time in getting kids into hockey when they were really young. And those are the types of things that go
Arizona
a long way
too.
To, creating a lifelong fan, but B, really building a fan base because you have a bunch of kids. It's infectious. It really is. So it's good to hear that, you know, she's involved in some of the stuff that the Rangers are doing. Ice hockey in Harlem is another one that goes on. Mark Messier is working on a couple of projects as well. There's a lot to be said for that type of grassroots campaign. You could see even Las Vegas did a whole basically hockey 101 thing this summer, a couple of those events as well. And that is exactly how you grow the game. And you might look at the Rangers and think, well, there's no need for them to do that. They're an Original Six franchise, biggest city in America. And while all that is true, you really can never have too many fans. And there's going to be plenty of people who are going to pass their fanhood down, like I'm going to my daughter and as Colton obviously has with his children. But there's also a lot of people that need to get into it organically. And there's some really cool things to be done there. Mike, I feel like I cut you off. Colton, I cut you off.
No, I was kind of cutting you off. But I just think, like you said, the Rangers, they do a great job with youth hockey and developing from the, you know, from the grassroots up. But it's just, you know, they came up with this new program. They have a rookies, like, for beginners league that they're starting right now. That's, you know, for kids that, you know, they're not sure if they want to play hockey, but, you know, they want to try it out. And so they got all these programs that are available to kids around the, you know, the Tri-State area, which are just great for them to become fans and also just to get out and be active and have fun. So, yeah, like you said, it's fun to see kids, you know, jumping on the bandwagon being Ranger fans or just being hockey fans.
Yeah, it's funny. I was on the train recently talking to a bunch of pretty hardcore Rangers fans, and I asked a question that no one could answer, which was, when was the last time a New York City born guy, you know, a New York guy made it to the NHL? And no one really had the answer for it. You know, there's famously the Mullen brothers, but there's plenty of guys who, you know, came up through programs like Mid-Fairfield and like New Jersey Rockets has produced a lot of NHL talent, like Roenick.
Let me know the answer
to
this.
A couple other guys. You might.
Is it where Shattenkirk from? Yeah, where Shattenkirk? He's kind of he's New York, isn't he too?
Yeah, Shattenkirk is what, New Rochelle. But I think wasn't Nicky Fatio the first New York Ranger who was born in New York?
Well, Shattenkirk's Greenwich, Connecticut, apparently.
Oh.
We were close. Get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, we were
Which
really
is
close.
Pretty much adjacent. Nick Fatio, Staten Island.
That's got to count, right? That's a borough.
It's close.
Do you know the answer since you asked the question?
No, yeah, I just thought it was. No, it's to me, it's so interesting because you think of how many. You can't go to a rink in the NHL without seeing Rangers fans, and a lot of them. And you think of how many people are Rangers fans, but you know it's interesting that we've seen so few people come up. You know, like we've been hearing all these great stories about, you know, the Austin Matthews of the world, and you know Arizona and all the famous young guys out of you know the St. Louis program that they had there, and it's weird that there's been kind of a hiccup in, you know, specifically around the city in hockey talent, but that's what makes these programs so great, because you get to expose the game, you know, to players and, you know, kids. And the problem with hockey so often is that it's a very tough sport to get into, just in terms of being, you know, there's an income gap for, you know, with hockey, as I'm sure, you know, Colton knows, and especially with, you know, teaching, getting his daughter on the ice and everything, getting pads and stuff for your kids is not easy, especially when they're growing.
Yeah, it's like crazy expensive. And I was smart. I, from my hockey rep, I made sure, I think my daughter was like one at the time. I'm like, I'm going to need skates from, you know, sizes kids five and up. So like, just give me a bunch. And I got like three or four pairs, because I know they're going to grow up. Just knowing that how expensive it is. And, that's what some of these programs do, is they try and make it affordable. That's what you need to do, is try and just give them an opportunity to be able to try it, to see if they like it, is very important, you know, because if they can't get out there and get the equipment and can't try it, then they'll never know that, you know, they can play hockey or they like it.
According to Wikipedia, which I am using as a Bible resource on this, I don't know why my wife isn't picking up the phone, but that's what you hear in the background. Fatio is the first New York City-born New York Ranger, so that is the answer to your question. And I only know that because of my father. So, and I feel like he was at an event recently that they had for like season ticket holders, and he announced that to the group. So, and another enforcer. So there you go.
There we have it.
Transferring sort of over to the, I guess, the current New York Rangers. You've obviously had an eye on them with the SNY stuff. I know you might be doing some stuff with the Islanders and the Devils as well. But what are some of your thoughts on, you mentioned Shattenkirk, obviously an enormous signing for the Rangers, and the core is a little bit different from I guess the glory days, if you will, or that little golden era that the New York Rangers had. And from a hockey mind, what do you think about some of the changes the Rangers have made to this point?
Well, you know, like you said, the core has changed. The change has been, you know, slowly happening, I feel. Like every year it's, you know, one guy gone and they bring someone else. I definitely think, like you said, everyone's talking about Shattenkirk being a great addition. He's going to add so much. And for what they got him for, like we just talked about, it's a hometown discount for him to come here and play, where I felt he could have got a lot more somewhere else. I think they're going to be like they are. They'll always be super competitive. They got this fast transition, really quick team, and they're really fun to watch. I do think they're like lacking a little bit of, you know, size and grit that, you know, you look at some of these teams like Pittsburgh that went out and got Reeves, and, you know, there's still a little bit of that aspect around the league. I think that they might kind of run up against the season, but I think they can they find ways to get around that, and they just use their speed. They're so fast, and they're definitely a team that's going to be tough to beat this year, I think.
So actually, I'm kind of glad you brought that up, because that's something that has, I don't want to say divided the fan base, but it's definitely been one of the big talking points, has been, you know, the grit level, energy spark type players and what they bring to the table versus, you know, maybe going in a more skill direction. And I would say myself, Mike, most of the people who write for our website happen to be in the camp that skill kind of trumps that toughness edge, especially these days. And I think we've kind of gone over the fact that back when the Rangers won the Cup in 94, even in the early 2000s, that certainly wasn't the case. There was definitely an element of needed toughness to succeed. But with the way that the game has changed, do you still feel like that's a critical role, not necessarily in the NHL locker room, but to a team's success? Or are you kind of seeing the game maybe move away from those types of players and more toward the skill level of things?
Well, the days of, you know, your enforcer go out there, play 3 minutes and fight and try and intimidate that way, you know, you're not going to see that anymore. I think that's been obvious by a lot of the guys who aren't in the league anymore. And with that changeover, it definitely, you can see the speed, you can see the skill level. You look at how these kids are developing at such a younger age. When they get to the NHL, they're ready. Like, they're, you know, they already know what to do for fitness and diet. And so it's definitely gotten younger as well, just because these guys prepare so well now, and they kind of know what it takes to when they get there and what it's going to, you know, what it's going to be like at that level. But I definitely think, like, I know you still need some toughness to a team. You're going to need players to kind of, you look at like a guy, they still want that. When I had Phil Kessel in Toronto, he wanted a guy like me at the end of the bench, just knowing that, okay, it makes his life a little easier, that he's not going to have to put up with something. So the players, I definitely still see a place for that. And just that little bit of intimidation, knowing that, you know, they're not going to get messed with. But you're going to want a guy that can play. You're going to want guys that can play 10, 12 minutes. I think it's going to be a different type of player, like, say, Matt Martin in Toronto, who, you know, he'll contribute, he'll score some goals, but he can skate and play more than, you know, maybe some of the typical enforcers before. But I think there's still value in it in today's game.
So it's interesting because the Rangers recently invited Bobby Farnham on a PTO, and Farnham is kind of like that straight line kind of player. You know, he doesn't take any shifts off. He finishes every check he takes. And it's interesting looking at the Rangers roster for next season, that lack of size, you know, that you mentioned is there. This is not a very big or physical team. And I think is there a point, you think, in training camp where, you know, you look around and you say, oh, we might not have enough of this element? Is that something the Rangers might have to worry about this training camp?
I don't think it's something you're going to see in training camp. It'll be something throughout the season, and seeing, you know, how they're doing. If it is causing them problems, if it is an issue, if they're getting pushed around a little bit, or like you look at last year when they inserted Glass to the lineup because they felt like they were getting pushed around a little bit. It'll be that type of thing. It'll just see how it goes and if they're going to need to bring in a player like that. I think they can use their speed to beat teams. I think they're, and you know, the way they're built, they can still play. You know, you look at Zouk and the way he plays such a hard game. And he can be an agitator. They can keep the team in the penalty box all game if they just play that kind of fast, agitating game, and just they'll frustrate teams that can't keep up with them. So, you know, you can look at it. You can go after different angles instead of just going out there and bringing someone tough for the sake of bringing in someone tough. I think they're going to play to their strengths and see how other teams can handle it.
And that's a really, I think, one of the points that you brought up, which is just that, you know, you're not getting that 5 minute a night, he's going to go out and punch a couple of faces and then walk away type of guy. We've, like I said, we're on the ideology that skill trumps toughness, but that doesn't necessarily mean that trumpness or toughness is obsolete. But you look at a guy like maybe Lucic, as I would consider a really good example of a tough guy who can also play hockey. And you said it, you have to be able to play. The game at least in my opinion, and you obviously can speak for it, is way faster than it was 5 years ago, way faster than it was 10 years ago. And you're seeing a lot more of this, not, I don't want to say a European invasion, because there's obviously, but I think the way that Europe is kind of entering the game, the Jaromir Jagrs of the world, who would just dangle the puck and play with the puck in east-west, they would move around Nylander, Straka, those Rangers teams right after the lockout that were really, it was more about moving the puck back and forth, taking your time, getting into the zone, controlling the puck. These days, it's a lot more north-south speed. And you, like Colton said, kids are coming out of the WHL, they're coming out of the OHL, they're coming out of juniors ready to play that kind of hockey. And it's all different. They have dietitians. They know what they should be doing for their workout regimen. These guys are probably working out 360 days a year. There's definitely maybe a little bit of a difference these days than there was even, like I said, 5 or 10 years ago. The game is moving in a direction. But I think that's – everything you said is kind of the where I think there's a sticking point, because a lot of people look at it in black and white terms. If you don't want a guy like, say, Tanner Glass, you don't want toughness on a team. But that's not necessarily where you stand, or at least where we stand. I think you do want a little bit of that toughness. Sometimes I think Zuccarello is the best enforcer the Rangers have had, and probably since you were around, with the way that he plays, and he'll drop the gloves and he doesn't care. But you need that element of can play too, because teams are just too fast. And actually, so you mentioned it. I'm curious. We thought that Ottawa in the playoffs this year tried to out, you know, muscle the Rangers. They played a really big bottom six that was slow, and we thought it was one of the things that backfired on them. Is that something that you would agree with, or did you see something different?
No, I thought that was more Montreal too tried to do that, because you look at some of the moves they made, the way they brought in some of the players, and then
Steve
Ottawa.
I thought Montreal sank their own ship with the way that they tried to put together that bottom six, like King and was Ott
exactly
part of that? He was, wasn't it?
Yeah, Ott, King, and you can tell that they can't keep up to the Rangers' speed. Ottawa, I think it was just for me, what I saw was just being able to contain Carlson. He's a game changer, that player. And at first, the Rangers having trouble shutting him down. And once they were able to kind of get him under control, it was a different series. I think he was even ended up being a little bit hurt or something, too, as well.
He had like a broken foot, didn't he? And he was still that good?
I think
he was playing like 30 minutes a night?
Yeah, he's still playing. And I think, well, that was definitely something you could see. He slowed down a little bit. He was still, though, he's a game changer. He's one of the best defense in the league, I would say, right now.
Not so in sort of that enforcer kind of role, we were talking about, you know, some of the topics, and concussions are a really big part of the discussion right now, although I would say the concussion issue is a little bit more focused around maybe shots to the head rather than actual fighting. But as someone who kind of came up through juniors and came up through the NHL as an enforcer, a guy who was willing to get off the bench and drop the gloves, is that something that you think the NHL is doing a good job moving towards in terms of head safety and concussion protocol, or is that something you think they maybe need a little bit more work with?
Well, I don't want to get too much into what the league's doing. I'm not, you know, it's tough to say, because what's going to go on with concussions? It's been an issue for a while now, and it's an issue in a lot of sports. And you're going to have to find, I think, ways to protect your players and ways to take care of your players, because it's going to continue to be an issue if you don't find ways. But you are playing a contact sport, so you also have to be prepared to get hit. Like you're signing up to play a game where you're on skates and you're able to skate 100 mile an hour and get hit. So I think it's also just making sure that they're taking care of players when they do get hurt properly is kind of what they have to take a look at.
Yeah, which is where I think a lot of teams are making some really big strides, and especially the fact that an official can witness a hit happen or a player who's maybe not feeling well, or they realize something's wrong and make them go to the room to get tested. I think we saw that with Antti Raanta at one point this year. So, Henrik Lundqvist too, if I'm not mistaken. So there are definitely motives. And I think the NHL has at least taken a little bit more of a proactive response now. Obviously there are people who disagree with that. And I mean, everybody can do more, and football seems to be in the spotlight really for this issue. But yeah, definitely curious about that. Now, I have a curiosity question. So you played the majority of your career for Toronto. You played in Toronto and you played in New York. Those are looked at as,
yep,
say, two of the big three, you know, Montreal, Toronto, New York. Is New York as hockey crazed as Toronto is? Does New York have that kind of Canada feel in terms of what you saw in Toronto, or are there subtle differences to it?
There's subtle differences for sure. When you look at New York, the hockey fans are amazing hockey fans. When you go to MSG, there's nothing better than being at the Garden and just having, you know, the noise and being in that building, the history and everything. You can't beat that. It's in that way, you know, it's one of the best. But you also have, you know, we're probably not the biggest draw for sports in New York. You having, you know, you got up to football and you have baseball, you know, the Yankees and Mets and all these other teams. So outside of, say, the hockey community, it's not as big as when you go to Toronto. Hockey, you know, hockey is everything. Hockey are their, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs are their Yankees. It's bigger than anything there. So you're on a broader scale. Yeah, it's bigger in that way, I think, is what the difference would be.
So I've been waiting to ask. When we heard we might get you on the show, I immediately thought of this. It's just the sort of dumb question that I think a lot of fans would want to know. And I'm a dumb fan, so I figured I might as well ask it. It's one of my favorite random just hockey clips I've seen. I think it was George the Rock, and it's a fight that starts with like, "Do you want to go? Yeah, let's go." And then it's like, "Good luck, buddy." And then, you know, the movie Goon.
That clip. Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, and I think the movie Goon did a parody of it. And so my question to you is, you know, you obviously played nearly 500 games in the NHL. Was there a particular weird start to a fight, or like a particularly like gentlemanly agreement to a fight that you had during your career?
One of the weirder ones, I think, for sure, would be when I fought Brian McGrattan. I was in Toronto. He was with Calgary, and we had a mutual friend, and he was actually the trainer, and he played her at the time. And he was texting the trainer going, "I got a new move for your boy there," and was, you know, talking about me. And so he was telling me before the game, like, you know, texting, you know, plates that he's got a new move. So I'm obviously going, okay, I think we're gonna fight tonight. And you know, so we kind of said, "Hey, what's up?" and warm ups and first shift, and there we go, we're in a scrap. And so to think that we're, you know, it's almost through text message that we're planning fights is have to be one of the weirder ones for sure for me. And we're
was the new,
really good friends
was,
now. Me and McGrattan are we're, you know, we talk all the time now. I think a lot of us do. It's, you know, we have all our style, that respect for we all did that job, and you know how hard it was. So like, you know, McGrattan and Peros and all these guys that I've fought a bunch of times were good friends. You know, I was at a golf tournament with Cairns and Holton and Asham and all these guys from the Islanders, and I fought them all at least two or three times, and we're all can, you know, sit there and go have a good day of golf and not think anything of it, which is pretty neat to think of. You know, you think you want to kill each other, but you know, it was a game. It was what we did as our job, and we kind of all left that on the ice.
Well, I gotta ask, was the move that he learned any good?
No, I don't think so. I don't remember what it was. I don't think he got to put it into play. Actually, I should ask him that again. What the move was? But he didn't.
I'm just saying, if you don't know what the move was, it wasn't good. You'd remember if
it couldn't have been terribly good.
It didn't pan out. No. So.
I mean, it's interesting. You mentioned a lot of those guys. You know, Asham, you know, for instance, was a guy who really peculiar with him because he bounced around the division. You know, obviously he had a stint with the Rangers, but it's a weird thing that I think not a lot of fans realize the kind of the human side of being traded or your contract's up and you have to sign elsewhere. Can you talk about what it was like for you to, you know, get the feeling that, you know, your time in New York was done when, you know, the contract with Toronto was there and moving from New York to Toronto?
Yeah, that was definitely, didn't think maybe I was moving on. I met my wife in New York back in 08, and we ended up buying a house together, getting married, and then all that. And by that summer, we were, going to Toronto. So it happened so quickly. And so now you're going, man, we got this house that we just bought, and now we got to pack up and, you know, go live in Toronto for 4 years. When you're thinking, okay, you know, I might be here for a long time. So that was definitely something that you don't really plan for. And it's you can never really prepare for it, because you never know. Like, at least lucky for me, I had time to, for the rest of summer, kind of get ready to go and make sure I had a place when I got to Toronto. When you get traded, you got to be gone the next day. You got to be to wherever you got to go. So that's definitely a lot harder, I'd say, than it's free agency, you know, because you actually get some time to prepare. But it still can be a shock when I was in New York for almost 5 years or four and a half years, and so you don't expect to go, but you know, it's part of the game. It's a business, and it can be tough for sure.
So I'm gonna, you can either give your favorite Ranger moment, or you can give, I guess, an NHL moment. But you had almost 10 years or a little over 10 years in the NHL. What was your favorite moment?
I got a couple. I'll give you a couple because it's hard.
I'll take as many as you want to give.
one with the Rangers would be, it was in Tampa. And I break my stick, and so I go on the bench to get a stick, and Brendan Shanahan's on the bench, and he's right-handed, so I go to take a stick, and he wouldn't really give it to me. He wasn't really letting go of it, so I really had to, like, yank it out of his hand. And I ended up going down and making kind of a move, and I always tell people it was, you know, I fired it top shelf and scored. I think I actually kind of clubbed on it, and there was a change-up and went in. But until I did score with Shanahan's stick, and I was going by the bench celebrating, and I was pointing at the stick going, it's the stick. And so it was, you know, it was just pretty funny. I'm scoring with Shanahan's stick, and I'm pretty sure I'm like, I got to keep this one because, you know, I'm going to be able to score a few more with it. So that was one of my favorite memories with being with New York. Another one was when I was with Toronto. Was my 300th NHL game, and it was in Jersey. We're playing against the Devils. My wife and her family all came down, and I felt good that game. It was like flying around. Like, man, I never expected to play 300 NHL games, let alone one. So, you know, I was pumped just to kind of be out there. And sure enough, I get a breakaway on Martin Brodeur. And I'm flying down going, okay, what am I going to deke this guy? I don't know what to do. So I shoot, low blocker, score, I'm scoring on a Hall of Famer. So that was pretty good moment in my career, to my 300 NHL game, to, you know, score on a Hall of Famer is definitely like one of the better memories I have in my career.
Yeah, and that's another thing that I think a lot of people maybe don't think about is when you think about the game itself, obviously the big-name players jump out at you, right? The Lundqvists of the world, the Ovechkins of the world, and Crosby and whatnot. But there are a lot of guys, and you're one of them, who kind of came up through the ranks. You came up through the WHL. You made it to the NHL, and you know, you had a couple of stints. I didn't even realize you were with Boston before you came to the Rangers. And it's got to be an awesome feeling just to kind of look around and be like, wow. And you hear guys say, you know, never take it for granted, because you really don't know. But, it's got to be a really good feeling to kind of stick around. And that's that you had score on your 300th game. There it is.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah, no, you go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to go to another topic, but if you have a actual logical point about being an NHL player that I would know nothing about, I'll take it.
Now I forgot. I don't know where we're going to go with that. But yeah, no, go to the next topic. What are you?
I ruined the podcast. Mike usually ruins the podcast.
You always do.
Something has to happen. Some of the greatest questions, some of the best answers that we get or that you hear about pranks. What was the best prank? You don't necessarily have to be a part of it, but that you saw in your time in the NHL.
Oh, I guess. Okay. So,
this is going to be a good one.
Actually, so I hear this is okay. So, rooming with Sean Avery as my roommate, and I think we're taking. We're sleeping. It was during the night, and I guess he was up a little later, or he couldn't sleep or something because he decided to get all dressed and turn all the lights on and start just panicking. Just go, we're late, we're going to be late. We're like, you know, he just starts screaming, say, we got to go, we got to get up. And he gets me out of bed. Like, he changed the clocks and everything. And, I'm running to get ready and get everything on. I'm like, how do we sleep in? Like, what happened to our alarm? Gets all ready, and it's like 3 a.m. He was just messing around with me. I don't know why. I guess that was, but yeah, so that was probably one of the better ones. That had done to me at least.
I don't know the answer to this question. I feel like Zuccarello is the big prankster with the Rangers right now. I would love for like 5 minutes of his pranking stories. We got a little bit of it in the 24/7 series. We got to see Marian Gaborik was kind of zany. You got this inside look at the Rangers, but for whatever reason, and I don't know that you would actually, because you played with him, you would know. Was Yager kind of a guy who would kind of do stuff like that?
He was funny. He was funny in a different way. He wasn't really a prankster. He just kind of had his dry humor. He wasn't more like, I don't remember him doing too many pranks. I do have some now. It's like, I'm starting to think now. You got me thinking about pranks now. Another good one, I think we did, was maybe Kadri in Toronto, was you sold a cell phone in the pocket, and then you try and get the trainers to call it when we're in like a meeting or something, have it ring around loud. That's another good one that, the guys would use.
I can't believe I've never thought of that. That's amazing. Just reaching into his pocket to try to get into the phone, just going crazy.
Yeah. Can't get it. Yeah,
I would sew my finger together, but I would try it outside of the selling factor.
Yeah, we'd had the professionals sew everything up, so it was all.
And I would trust those guys. Doctors who are working with the stitches, they can sew a pocket.
Sewing myself, no.
They could definitely sew a pocket. So who would you consider to be the toughest guy in the NHL right now, or maybe even like the toughest guy that you played against?
In the NHL, you look at Reeves right now. Now he's with Pittsburgh. He has a reputation. He's kind of been through the whole change now. And the way the NHL has gone, and he plays a pretty good shift, but he's one of the tougher guys that are left for sure. He's the kind of guy I don't think too many would mess with. And like you said, you got Lushik. He's tough. I fought him, and he's a really good player. But if you get on his bad side, he's a guy that can hurt you.
Yeah, I don't know how to say this. I'm a big supporter of fighting. I guess I'm not totally for the staged fights, like the LaRocque-ish fight. But one of my favorite memories of going to a Ranger game was when Shanahan fought Brashear at center ice when Brashear was just running amok. That might have been the game that he injured Blair Betts. I don't remember.
That was a different game. I remember that game as well. Yeah, it was a different game. I got a 5-game suspension for cross-checking Ovechkin in the face for that one.
Remember that.
It was part of that one there too. I think I took out a couple of his front teeth, but that was part of that game where, cause it was just, that game was just getting out of hand. and Shanahan stepped up and took on Brashear. And when I, for me, seeing him do that as a young, you know, I was still young then, and Brendan Shanahan went on fighting Donald Brashear, you just respect you get for a guy like that. And you can see what it does for like a locker room and a team when a guy will step up and take on a guy that tough. And those that's the kind of player you want in your dressing room, is someone that could kind of, you know, will stand up no matter who it is.
And so actually something you just said to me, or said with, you know, with Milan Lucic, with, you know, you can watch that guy on TV now and say to yourself, yeah, I was in a fist fight with that man. And there's really not that many people that you encounter in everyday life who, you know, have that kind of reality and have that life experience. Does that ever like cross your mind as, you know, what a crazy and intense way, you know, that you worked your way into the league, you know, the hard way getting into the NHL. Cause I don't think even people who, you know, criticize fighting or don't think it belongs in the game and things like that, no one is under the illusion that it's an easy way to make an NHL roster. I mean, it's just brutal. But does it ever cross your mind, like, yeah, you know, I fought that guy that's on TV, and, you know, how that's something that the vast majority of people don't have to think about?
It was more of a thing when I, like, played. When you're sitting there going, the night before, I have to go out and fight Donald Brashear tomorrow.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
That's when you're thinking about it going. that's the hard way. That's that's when it's real. That's when you knew how hard it was, and you knew what you were doing is a hard job. But like you said, it got me there. This is what I did. I took pride in my job as an enforcer. And you know, I don't like to call myself that, but I do. I guess it's my handle for my Twitter now. So I liked it. I liked what I did. I took pride in going out and making sure that the skilled players on my team or the whole team were more comfortable, and I could take the pressure off them and not having to worry about, you know, some of the guys going after them, because I would try and make sure that no one would touch them. It was just like, I liked doing that for Jágr and Shanahan and Drury and Gomez. You know, I can go on and on the players that I played with that, you know, they all respected what I did, and they made sure that they let me know. So I think when you have that respect from other players, that's where you appreciate it. That's where you know that you're doing your job and that it is worth your while.
So you let me get away with one dumb fan question earlier, so I'm going to take liberties and ask another one. I think some of the most amazing things we get to see as fans is, you know, just kind of the chatter between benches, and often, like, there's no better character, like, in terms of characters, a lot of the tough guys in the league are the best characters. You mentioned Avery, obviously, you know, he was beloved by Ranger fans for, you know, not only how he played, but how often he was able to talk and really never stop talking. But was that something, like, you know, that often, like, do you feel like that's part of the role, is that guy who's there to be this kind of, you know, it's not just everyone's more comfortable on the bench with you there, but you're this kind of energy, you know what I mean? And it's, I think when we hear the term like, oh, he's an energy line player, or, you know, he'll change the momentum, we don't appreciate what that means. But was that something you did in your career? Is like, were you a talker? Did you talk to the other bench? And especially, you know, I can't imagine what goes through your head knowing you might have to fight LaRocque the next night, but I don't know if you can talk to that at all.
I wasn't the biggest talker. I didn't go around, you know, chirping everyone and trying to come up with the best line or make fun of somebody. That wasn't my style. I like to just kind of use my toughness as you know. You know, I didn't need to speak or, you know, do anything too crazy. But also used to play a very aggressive game as well. Like, I wasn't just going out there and fighting all the time. Like, when I played under Tom Rennie in New York, I think I had some of my best years here was when, you know, he played me against lines like Crosby with Pittsburgh, and he would would make like Goddard come fight me because I would be, you know, going after their star. I'd be agitating him, getting him off his game. I would be running around hitting a lot. You know, that's kind of when I think it was the best, when you would have the fights come to you, when you're making people fight you. So I used to just use my hitting and my physicality as, to get things started instead of, my words and just, running my mouth.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I can imagine you sitting on the bench and just like listening to Avery say something, you're just like, oh my God, I'm going to have to fight today because he just run his mouth.
I liked having a guy like that. You know, I played with Hallwig, and he was one of my favorite players to play with, because he ran around like crazy, and I knew he was going to create energy and make me more excited and make me have to, make sure I was ready because he's going to go hammer Chris Simon on the island and something's going to happen. And that was fun. That was exciting when you're just, you got that energy and the team would really feed off stuff like that. When you see a line like me and Hallig and Betsy going out there and just causing so much havoc as we did, that does create energy. That does do something for a team. There's all these stats about momentum and did that really do anything? And, I don't know. I can tell you when you got me and Hallwig running down on you every game, or me and McLaren looking, you got defense looking over their shoulder, that's creating room. That's creating, just wearing the defenseman down. They're looking over their shoulder. It has a role in the game. It's just going to be done differently. It's still going to be a factor coming up in the season to come.
Are you a believer in advanced statistics? Is that something you put weight in?
I do think they're helpful. I think statistics can give you, something to kind of put on paper and look at and give you an idea, how you're playing or what's going on with the team. But I also believe in just that hockey is such a quick game and there's so much room for just, it's not always like a pitcher versus the batter. There's so much more dynamic to hockey that you can't just be measured and say just a single stat sometimes or single, that analytic that's out there.
Yeah, and that's a big part.
There's too many variables sometimes, I think, I think they're helpful, but there's a lot of variables that you can't always account for.
That is, you literally explained it, really the take that I have. I know Mike agrees with me, just that it's not like baseball. Baseball, I sometimes feel like, is just a math equation. I'm not a big baseball fan, for the record. So if you take umbrage with that, I don't blame you. And a lot of people use, if you use advanced statistics wrong, it's if you're only focusing on one stat, whether it's Corsi or shooting percentage or whatever it may be, whatever you're doing, it's not. I think you need to use advanced statistics to kind of color in the picture a little bit, but. Like you said, there's so many different variables on the ice that there does need to be a blend. And we are seeing some teams. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, well, I think what's so important about it is we can't boil a player or a performance down to one number. You know, this isn't, EA Sports where we can just say, oh, yeah, this guy's an 83. You know, you need context for everything. And context means seeing the games. Context means understanding situations. You know, we can't just understand, oh, this guy's possession numbers are bad. Well, he was playing on Colorado. In Colorado, everyone had bad possession numbers. And, we have relative numbers. And it's like, yeah, but we still need more context. There's a lot more to it than just the number.
Yeah, you have to blend actually watching.
Yeah.
It's not
the eye test, you look at – like what a GM does. He's going to take in some of those numbers, and he's also going to know what the player's all about as well. Like, he's not just going to, you know, I think just use stats. Like, when you see a trade come in, and well, you know, if they trade for a guy, everyone will be like, oh, his possession numbers are low. And I'm pretty sure there's a lot more to it than just that. You know, he has more of the offer than, you know, maybe just his possession isn't the best. There's so much more to it than just like a single stat that people look at.
Yeah. Do you see yourself going and trying to get into the front office at all?
I'm just taking things, you know, like I said, year by year. I'm just kind of enjoying what I'm doing now. I'm enjoying the broadcasting. I definitely enjoy developing and working with players. So I do, you know, see myself in some way continuing to work on that as well. Like I said, I'm doing the youth coaching right now. So that's fun for me to be a part of and kind of work with kids. So, you know, I'm just going to kind of enjoy this season, all the stuff I got going on, and just kind of see where it leads me from there.
Yeah, and you're going to get a good kind of a good view. You're going to get a good view of it from the broadcasting side. Mike, I know I meant to talk about it first, but then we obviously got caught up in the some of the hockey stuff. But go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you specifically about you know, you're marching in the Pride Parade and really how that came about, and you know, it's one of those things where it's so important, I think, for, you know, hockey fans of all ages to see, you know, players, guys they watch on TV, players they idolize, especially, you know, I think some people might not expect it of, you know, a guy who's frankly as tough as you are, with that message of like inclusivity and, you know, that this is something that's important and that it matters, you know, that everyone who can play can play. Can you kind of talk about how that came about and what it meant to you, that experience?
Yeah, so the You Can Play the alumni, the Ranger alumni came up to me and asked me if I'd be wanting to do that, and they said it was for the You Can Play. And for the You Can Play, it was the founders were Patrick Burke and Brian Burke. And Brian is, you know, part of my career, and he brought me into Toronto. And I have so much respect for him. And, you know, I just, when I heard that, you know, it'd be, you know, that's part of it, I was just, you know, I really wanted to make sure that I was available to do it. And, you know, something I wanted to do and kind of send that message that it doesn't matter your, you know, sexual preference or your gender identity. You know, it's just like, it's, if you can play hockey, like you're accepted in the league, and you can see throughout the league how much they're trying to do. And then you look at other teams, you had Holtby in Washington, you had Carcillo, Chicago, and you can see more. They're definitely getting out. There's starting to be a lot more participation and involvement throughout the league. And I think it's very important for people to see. I think when I was getting messages from people, just, you know, tell me how much that meant to see me out there, you know, joining the parade, I think that it was touching. It was, you know, you can see you're changing people's day, their views, and trying to bring everyone, you know, bring them together. It's still a long way to go in trying to do that. But I think they're in the right direction. And it definitely is. I think that parade in New York was being a part that was really special. And just, I met so many people there, and not only just, you know, they weren't even hockey fans, just people, just good people. It was just a fun to be a part of.
Yeah. And honestly, thank you for doing that, because I think it goes a really long way. And a lot of NHL teams are kind of going down that road. And Holtby is somebody who just immediately comes to mind about being very active in with the You Can Play community. And actually another guy, Sean Avery, I remember maybe even before You Can Play, I don't know. He was talking about how if any player, you know, wants to come out to their team, he would be willing to go with them and stand in the locker room, and maybe it would make it a little bit easier if he was there backing them up. And it's such an important thing, because you look at how tight-knit of a community hockey is, you look at how tight-knit of a community really any professional sport is, and it probably means so much for someone to see you out there, somebody who played in the NHL, who is supporting them without even knowing them. It really does go a very long way, and we were really, really happy to see the Rangers have a representative and you can play and the Rangers being involved in it. And obviously the NWHL is and the Riveters, everybody's kind of getting involved, and it's awesome to see. It really is. And it's really cool. Go ahead.
Yeah, you've seen it through a lot of leagues. You know, you've got the what's this MLS. Everyone's getting involved, and I think that's what you need. You need every league and every team to get involved, and I think that's what you're seeing now. And it makes a huge difference when you get to see people participating like that. And it was an honor for me to be out there and be a part of that and representing the Rangers on that day.
Yeah, it was really cool.
It was great.
I'm gonna put
you
on the spot here. What is your prediction for the Rangers this season?
Prediction. Yeah, I don't know if we're making any predictions yet. no, I'm not gonna give that to you. It's too tough. I'm not a prediction guy. Yeah, it's so hard with the Rangers. They've been good for so long. You keep thinking that their time is now. Lundqvist is getting older, and you know, like you look at their lineup and the changes they made. Like they're found ways to bring in youth that can help them. Some players that are starting to step up. I think they're obviously going to be contenders again this season. I think it's, you know, because that window is running out here quickly. So,
yeah, it's the Lundqvist window. Well, I apologize. If it makes you feel any better, we are a notorious podcast of asking each other questions like that, and none of us ever take stands. So you're fitting right in. You mentioned Lundqvist. I meant to ask you too. We hear a lot about his drive to win, his motivation, and just how fierce of a competitor he is. Is he as advertised, or is it a little bit blown up?
No, he is that driven to win. He's always wanting to win. When I've played with him, and he's a competitor. When in practice, he's always working on something. He was always trying to get better. He's always out there. He's, you know, just trying to win. He wanted to win. Like I used to, like even to, like shoot pucks on him from the corner. He'd get mad at me because he just did not want pucks to go in at all. It's just the way, you know. That's how competitive he was. You can see it. You can see it in him. He's a leader too. I think that's what a lot of people, you know, don't really know, because goalies aren't usually the most vocal around. They're kind of in their own kind of world, because, you know, they have to be very focused on just stopping a puck. But he's very, very vocal and a big leader and big say in that dressing room, which is huge too, because it's not always the case with goalies. And he's pushing other players to get better and to win. I think that's, he's one of the best out there, and I hope for him that he does get a cup one day, because he's deserved it over how much and how well he's played for these past years.
Yes, we've been praying to the hockey gods for that for quite a while, but I think you're right. It's every year it kind of feels like this is their year, but they reset. They basically hit the reset button this year, so it will be interesting to see what they do. Well, we don't want to keep you forever, so a couple of quick tags. Go see the movie. Go see Goon. Oh, somebody wanted to know, and I think it's, were you surprised, were the actors who were not hockey players good hockey players in the movie?
Were the act? No, there was. I don't think Sean William Scott could skate.
Movie magic.
Yeah, so I don't know, maybe I wasn't supposed to say that, but
that's fine. We don't have any editing ability, but we'll try to. We'll make sure people are listening.
Yeah, it's all good. It was fun. They loved having us on set, because it was a movie about what we did, and they wanted to make sure that it was done right, and they did a great job doing that. You know, really trying to represent, you know, what we're about. And so, yeah, go see it. It's a fun movie. we'll go see it, or it's available digital and DVD and everything tomorrow. So yeah, make sure everyone checks it out.
Yeah, go support Goon. Maybe there'll be a Goon 3. Who knows? And yeah, Fairfield Junior Rangers. And again, thank you. I mean, good luck with all the SNY stuff. I'm sure you'll be fantastic if this is any indication, just some of the stuff you were doing last year. But again, thank you for doing your work with the Pride Parade. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We would keep you forever if we could, but you're on to bigger and better things. So we really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me on, guys. It was a lot of fun. So we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Thanks. Have a good one.
All right. Take care.
Well, that was really, I don't know. Do we have anything to add to any of that? He was fantastic, by the way, just a really smart, well-spoken guy. It's awesome to get, I think, a lot of the things that we've talked about on the show, a lot of the things that we talk about on the website in regards to the enforcer role and advanced statistics and whatnot, to have somebody who played that role give their opinions. I don't know. Just from talking to him before the show, I knew he was smart, but it was just, that was really cool. Really, really cool. I don't feel like we could top what we've done to this point.
Yeah, I don't really, it's tough to like transition into, I know we were going to talk about like Denis Zaropov and some of the rumors surrounding the Rangers, but it's kind of hard to transition away from that. That was such a fun and interesting interview. Orr, I don't know about you, but Orr was one of those guys, you know, when the Rangers were getting out of those doldrum years after that lockout, you know, and he was part of that line. Like, I couldn't help myself. Like, I said it out loud when that Orr, Betts, Holwig line, I loved that line. That line was so fun to watch. And Blair Betts is one of those guys my brothers and I always joke about as like this like deeply underappreciated Ranger, you know, who just had the most unfortunate end to his time at the Rangers with that hit with Brashear. But Orr was another one of those guys where I didn't grow up like typically like attached to tough guys, but Orr had a way where he became, you know, it's hard to think of in recent history, you know, an enforcer who the fans embraced the way they embraced him. I mean, I can't think of one. Can you, in recent history?
No, probably not. I mean, the only guy who would even be close would be Avery. And I don't even know if Avery was
not
as much respect as Orr was, as much as it was just like, oh my God, this guy's awesome.
Yeah, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't even an enforcer. I mean,
no,
he
wasn't.
Just, you know, a pest and all that, but
yeah. Go see Goon. I mean, because by any indication that I enjoyed the original Goon, this looks good. It looks really good.
I love the first movie. Yeah, I'm really excited to see the second one. I know that you said like Delzato's in it, Sagan's in it.
I didn't realize Prust was in it. I didn't realize Prust was in it.
But yeah, Prust is going to the Kings on a PTO. He played last season in Germany.
Yeah, I actually did see that he was.
And another former Ranger, Ryan Malone's on a PTO.
Well, how many of these guys have gotten on before Yager is absolutely, I can't even fathom. I don't get it.
It is one of those things. So I'm writing something about PTOs, but like I've done a lot of research, and it's really interesting to think about, you know, what the role of that is for teams. And we see it a lot with just like, yeah, we need to fill out our training camp roster. You know, we need X amount of goalies, and we'd like a guy in here who's been around for a while. And, you know, we're maybe examining, you know, someone like Bobby Farnham is a guy the Rangers might be considering to fill a role, you know, in the AHL. And, you know, teams utilize it for a lot of different reasons. It's pretty rare that we see guys hit, you know, go into PTOs and they get contracts, but it's also even more rare. I was looking that, you know, cause we're recording this on August 31st. Last summer, there was two free agent signings, unrestricted free agent signings in all of September. And that was Kyle Quincy and Dennis Seidenberg. And there are still Vanek's still out there. Yager, obviously, is still out there.
Winnick.
You know, Winnick is still out there. Cody Franzen's still out there. It's kind of crazy to think that there's still, you know, these are not guys who are going to, like, you know, change the fate of a team, but these are, you know, these are NHL players. It's kind of crazy.
I don't know. Winnick might. Winnick and Yager, and by all metrics, Yager's still a...
Yager, the fact that Yager isn't signed, it hurts my brain, my heart, and my soul. It just doesn't
Vegas,
feel
what are
right
you doing, things. Vegas? I don't understand. Just, he will literally be the face of your franchise.
You know how many tickets and jerseys that will sell?
An insane
amount. I want a Yager Golden Knights jersey. I don't even like the Golden Knights jersey.
There it is. We're late to this, but the show is sponsored by Patreon. Patreon.com/BlueShirtBanter. You can get more of that, more little Colton Orr, huh? That should be a reason to jump into Patreon. John J. Porter, Anthony Viola, Alexander Rickard, Robert Courtney, Guy from Montana, Daniel DeGene, Eric Cohn, Matt Bader, George Littman, Bob Kawa, Andrew Grigo, Stink Fleeman, John Reppy, Arch Williams, Igor Zatlovsky, Dan Carosi, Alexander Thornton, Thomas Osa, Trevor Kempner, and Michael Silvers have all donated to us. And now look at us. I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but... Now look
it's weird to think that our podcast has producers.
Do we have producers?
Yeah, technically they're all kind of producers.
It's interesting.
In a weird way.
That's true. Oh, I see what you're saying
want,
now.
Do you want the Rangers to sign or take a look at Zaropov?
I do. I more skill can't hurt. Like, I could care less about the whole steroid thing, and maybe that makes me a bad person. Like, people are like, well, what about the role model? He's not playing with kids. And I
Did
can't
even,
even...
I don't even...
I don't know what don't he was suspended for. Sudafed?
He was... He tested positive for a diuretic and other masking agents, and I'm trying to remember what the first thing was. But, you know, it was one of those things where I'm sure every athlete who, you know, gets caught, you know, in an anti-doping thing and they have, you know, some sort of doping, everyone's reaction is, I can't believe this. I don't know how this happened. But, like, when I was reading his comments, I was, like, taken aback. Like, yeah, he really seems like, you know, this isn't what he's, you know, what he's about. It's also important to point out he's 36 years old. And this was, I think, you know, the first time he's got tagged for something like this. And more importantly, you know, I know that he's not a name that a lot of Rangers fans know, but if you watch a little bit of film on him, and obviously there are concerns with, you know, the North American game and the ice surface and all that, but he is a very, very good playmaker. He's not a center. And I know that you were saying he's interesting because he would kind of by default push Miller into that third line center role, but I really wouldn't be opposed to the Rangers just a 1-year deal. Just why the heck not? There's a little bit of cap space to play with. You know, I don't know if the Rangers are still trying to find something to get in return for Holden or whatever, but just like it's silly not to be calling Yager and Vanek, it's silly not to be looking into an option like this.
Yeah. I agree. All right. Well, thank you again to Colton Orr. And we will see you guys next week. We'll have some Traverse City to talk about. There's going to be a bunch of stuff. Bunch of stuff next week.
Yay.
Yeah.
Hockey. Oh my God.
Patreon.com/BlueShirtBanter. Beth is a whale.
Thanks for listening.